From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica Radio stations and affiliates nationwide. Watching the many hours of impeachment hearings over the past several weeks has been a challenging experience, particularly when House Republican committee members address witnesses. The obfuscations and angry defiance with which they've defended President Donald Trump could lead one to believe they inhabit an entirely different plane of reality. Asking what's wrong with Republicans in a new article is my guest, Rebecca Gordon. According to Gordon, the Trump Republican Party has inherited and continues to make use of the legacies of this nation's twin evils, slavery and imperial expansion. Rebecca Gordon writes for Tom Dispatch. She's on the faculty of the University of San Francisco's Philosophy Department. Her most recent book is American Nuremberg, The U.S. Officials Who Should Stand Trial for Post-9/11 War Crimes. And the full title of her latest article is What's Wrong with the Republicans? Fruits of the Twin Roots of Evil, Slavery and Imperial Expansion. Welcome to the program, Rebecca.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be with you.
So it certainly seems so bizarre to watch these proceedings, watch the evidence that's so clearly laid out for all to see, that any sane person who was not getting their information from Fox News would arrive at the conclusion that the president was clearly guilty of what the Democrats say he was guilty of. And then you hear the Republicans, who, as I said, seem to just occupy a different plane of reality. Were you also flabbergasted by the reactions from Republicans like Doug Collins and Jim Jordan?
Well, I wasn't flabbergasted because we have kind of come to expect this since Donald Trump was inaugurated in 2016. We have seen over and over again Republicans saying, well, if he goes this far, then that's it, I'm done. And then he goes that far and they say, well, if he goes a little bit further, then I'm done. Really, in fact, this Republican Party has absolutely thrown down with Donald Trump, not because they have any particular ideological affinity with him, but because he is the best vehicle for advancing the desires of the multiple strands that make up the current Republican Party. So I was horrified. I was annoyed. I have this very old-fashioned, childish response when somebody just simply lies to my face. I don't know what to do. I find it so frustrating, and yet that's exactly what they're doing. And the question is, what's going on in the Republican Party?
What's really interesting is that many of the witnesses that the Democrats have relied on are the sort of standard conservatives, many of them appointed by the Trump administration, many of them self-declared Republicans. And the Republicans have had to turn on them and to discredit them in order to defend Trump.
That's exactly right. And since Trump came to office, he has found himself in conflict with what the sociologist Max Weber talked about, the idea that a bureaucracy in a democratic government like the United States or in Britain, very often there is a career bureaucracy that maintains the structure of government and does the work of government as the elected politicians sort of come and go and come and go. And one of the benefits of that, of course, is that people develop real capacity. But these are the people that Donald Trump calls the deep state, which is sort of ironic because that's an expression that some of us on the left used to refer to the national security apparatus that continues regardless of whether it's a Democrat or a Republican in office. But yes, they have had to turn against their own appointees. And we are going to see this again as Attorney General Bill Barr brings it out his reports on his investigation of where the Russia inquiry came from in the first place. Donald Trump is going to have to turn on Bill Barr, who is one of his biggest supporters, because Bill Barr believes in essentially a monarchical, essentially a president who's a king, who
right.
rules by fiat.
Trump has referred to him as my attorney general. And you're talking about the report that is expected to be released December 9th that we just heard this week. the early result, you know, that that is likely to conclude and is concluding that it was Russian collusion that was being investigated and not some FBI conspiracy or the deep state looking to undermine the Trump presidency because they didn't like Trump. And this is by a federal prosecutor that Barr himself appointed. So it's going to be really interesting to see the mental gymnastics that he engages in.
Yes, if they get thrown out of office, they should consider a career in the Olympics as gymnasts.
So let's talk about the heart of the matter that you cut to in your article that you wrote for Tom Dispatch, that you say that the twin roots of evil, slavery and imperial expansion, is what continues to drive Republicans. Connect those lines for us, because that seems like those seem like abstract issues and also sort of historical issues that most ordinary Americans might think, well, those are things that we don't engage in anymore.
Right. One might think that until one knows that at Angola Prison, which is the largest prison in Louisiana, prisoners to this day, African-American men, most of them, are still made to pick cotton as part of their actual criminal they're serving their sentences. So, in fact, the connection between slavery and modern incarceration is very direct. But what slavery did was it enshrined the idea, and it's right there in our Constitution, that there are people in the United States who are less than completely human beings. And we see this in the Constitution, in the compromise that allowed slave-owning states to count their populations, including each enslaved person, as three-fifths of a human being for the purposes of deciding their representation in the House of Representatives. We still have, as a result of the compromises that were made between the North and the South in creating the Constitution, the Electoral College, which is how President Trump came to be president in 2016. He lost the popular vote, but the Electoral College, which disproportionately gives power to less populated states, including rural states and southern states, than to states with larger populations. And so we get the Electoral College. We get the Senate itself, which again disproportionately favors those smaller rural states, and we will see in the upcoming trial, impeachment trial, that that Senate is controlled by the Republicans. So from the very beginning, a group of people, people of African descent, were identified as legitimate targets of torture. And as you may know, most of my academic work is about torture, who and this history of torture continues through slavery, through the leasing of freed people who were then convicted for very minor crimes or no crime at all, and essentially sold back into slavery by the states to private corporations. And this went on all the way up through the 1920s. We also see it in the institutionalized use of lynching as a means of cementing white supremacy and controlling maintaining white control of an African American population. And we see it to this very day in those communities where people of color very often feel that the police are less there to support and protect them than they are an occupying army. And we see it in an incarceration system in which we still have 2.2 million people in jail and prison in this country, and that is the largest proportion of imprisoned people in any country in the world, and it is the largest actual raw number of imprisoned people of any country in the world, and the vast majority of them, not the vast majority, but they are vastly disproportionately people of color, African Americans, and Latinos. So the connection between the white supremacy that became the ideology that supports slavery, that says, of course we wouldn't enslave real human beings, but people of African descent are not real human beings in the same way. That ideology persists to this day, and we see it. We saw it in Charlotte. We see it in the attacks on my campus. Just at Thanksgiving time, there was an attack and a threat of violence against African Americans by a student on campus who used social media. These threats are real and continue to this very day. So
do you also see the attacks on voting rights and the continued defense of the Second Amendment as part of that same system?
Absolutely right. And actually, Roxanne Dunbar Ortiz has a new book about how the Second Amendment and its use as the right of individuals to continue to bear arms originated in the fight against Native peoples. It's worth taking a look at. But yes, so certainly the Second Amendment, which is very much used by white supremacists, and also, as you say, the new attempts on voting rights. I mean, people died in the 1960s for the right of African Americans to vote in the Jim Crow Southern states. And now we are seeing once again, it comes in a different way. Now it wears, you know, not so much the white sheet as the white paper that you see in offices and institutions. But the reality is the same, that people of color are losing their right to vote. And of course, the reason for that is that they're not going to vote for Republicans.
So this particular moment that we're in, it seems as though is a very important moment for the Republican Party to choose its direction, to choose to go the way of the 20 roots of evil, as you call them, slavery and imperial expansion, or go the way of modern day America, which is progress, which is the existence and full participation of people of color, women. And it seems as though they're choosing the twin evils in the form of Trump.
It seems that's true. The good news for those of us who are opposed to the Republican Party is that there are also cracks within that alliance, right?
Right.
So for example, part of Trump's base, really the strongest part of his base, is isolationist. They are people who would like to see the United States not fighting wars all over the world, although they would still like to see us projecting our military power everywhere. So they have an internal contradiction. But then there's also the fact that the U.S. military, as an institution, is very distrustful of Donald Trump. And it's, you know, it's been especially hard for me, having spent a lot of time in Latin America, in Nicaragua and El Salvador during the 1980s, to see the left suddenly touting people like John Bolton as great heroes. You know, he's the neocon's neocon, but he happens to oppose Trump because Trump didn't support the particular forms of militarist expansion that Bolton wanted to see us continue
right,
doing.
Right, Bolton wanted to launch a war on Iran, and Trump was reluctant. Trump has his sights elsewhere. And also recently, the whole spat with the Navy secretary over the Navy SEAL who was accused of war crimes, and Trump basically stepping over the Navy Secretary's authority and causing that resignation. I imagine that there's a lot of consternation within the military quietly against what Trump has done.
Absolutely, because whatever else you think about the military, there is a very strong culture within, especially within the regular branches, maybe less in the Joint Special Operations and some of the more spooky sort parts of the military, but the regular military really believes in the Geneva Conventions. They really believe in the rule of law. They really believe in their own internal justice system. And to have somebody from the outside step in and undo that system, they find very, very distressing.
So you have these twin evils, if you will, embodied by Trump and, you know, sort of imperfectly. It's not perfect. There are contradictions. And the Republican Party seems to have staked their entire future on it. What about economic issues? I mean, there's the racism, there's the imperial expansion. But a lot of people have said Trump is just also providing cover for, you know, what they might call a corporate coup d'etat.
And that's exactly right. I mean, this is in some ways the most cynical of the four strains that I sort of identified in the Republican Party are the wealth, those people who are dedicated to just maintaining and expanding the wealth of the people who are already the wealthiest. And these folks really have no national commitment at all anymore. Their commitment goes far beyond the United States. Their commitment is to the continued wealth of themselves and their progeny. And that's pretty much it. But they're quite willing to harness the fears of white, you know, anxious white people. They're quite willing to use propaganda that convinces people who are barely getting by economically that their biggest hope is tax cuts for the rich, that somehow that is what they elected Trump to do. Now, it is absolutely counter to the actual interests of people who are just barely getting by. But when you can stir up that and animate that anger and resentment and direct it not towards the 1% of the 1%, but towards people who look like they're getting something for nothing, or that you can convince are getting something for nothing, like people of color, immigrants, then you have the possibility of having them go along with and allow you to do your agenda. So what we've seen is the corporate rollback of so many regulations, the withdrawal or the threatened withdrawal from the climate treaty, the absolute enshrinement of corporate power through non-congressional methods by using all of the regulatory power of the various agencies that Trump controls. And, you know, he's not interested in that stuff. He doesn't care about that stuff. So the lobbyists...
He doesn't even understand that stuff.
He doesn't understand it. He doesn't even know what climate change, what the climate is. Yeah. He thinks it has something to do with air pollution and water pollution. So, yeah. And so the result is that this wealthiest group has been able to absolutely steer this administration to doing the only things that they really care about, which are reducing their taxes and reducing regulations. And they've gotten everything they paid for.
Right. Rebecca, the last time that Congress impeached a Republican president, which was, of course, Richard Nixon, how did that era's Republican Party react? And how do you contrast it with what we're seeing today?
Well, what's interesting is Nixon was never even actually impeached.
Right.
Because a group of high-up senators, Republican senators, including Barry Goldwater, who was the conservative's conservative in those days, his campaign slogan was, "In your heart, you know he's right," as in way right. So they went to President Nixon and they said, "Look, if you are impeached and there is a trial in the Senate, you are going to lose because what you have done is so egregiously and obviously a violation of your oath of office and a high crime and misdemeanor that you're going to lose. And your only hope to maintain, you know, a certain amount of honor in the world is to resign before that even happens." But the difference was that Republican Party had a commitment to the rule of law. I don't agree with a lot of their small government stuff. I don't agree with a lot of their policies. Although it's very interesting, we got some things now like affirmative action. That was a program that came in under Richard Nixon. Richard Nixon wanted to create a universal basic income and price controls to make things easier for the working class. There were things that the Nixon Republican Party wanted that would be considered way, way to the left today. But that Republican Party remained committed to the rule of law. And I think one important difference is what you started out with, which is in those days, we had a kind of agreed upon set of facts. We did not have what Trump has managed to create in this country, which is the idea that facts are simply a matter of opinion, that there is no such thing as objective reality, and that everything that happened or might have happened is only a question of, well, that's your opinion. We heard it with Kellyanne Conway when she talked about alternative facts about the number of people who actually attended Trump's inauguration. And so this is a real difference, I think, because it's now possible through the media silo of Fox News and right-wing websites for us to have an entirely different reality and a whole group of people in this country who live, as you said at the top, in an entirely different reality. So no amount of placing evidence in front of those people is going to convince them, because all that matters is almost an emotional commitment to Trump, as if that commitment to Trump were a commitment to their own survival.
I love the way you put that, an emotional commitment to Trump, and then hinging their survival on his surviving the presidency. Incredible.
And I think that's what it is. And I think that's why people fight so hard, because they feel it a threat to Trump as an existential threat to themselves.
In the face of that, it just seems like a strange and frankly, despairing place to be for the rest of us. Of course, the next year's election is a huge moment for that very reason, such a make or break moment, not just for the country, but even one could argue the world, given, for example, the issue of climate and militarism. Rebecca, what's a good place for people to find out more about the work you do?
They can find me at mainstreamingtorture.com. And I have many, many articles at tomdispatch.com. If they just go there and search for me on the website, they'll find my articles there. And I have a new book coming out probably in spring of 2021 that's going to be called The House That Torture Built, about the role of torture in constructing the United States.
Well, we should certainly have you back on then to talk about that book. We'll also link to the article from our website that we've just been discussing. Rebecca, thanks so much for joining us.
It was a real pleasure. Thank you, Sonali.
Rebecca Gordon is my guest. She writes for Tom Dispatch, and she's on the faculty of the University of San Francisco's Philosophy Department. Her most recent book is American Nuremberg, The U.S. Officials Who Should Stand Trial for Post-9/11 War Crimes. We've been discussing her latest article in Tom Dispatch, What's Wrong with the Republicans? Fruits of the Twin Roots of Evil, Slavery and Imperial Expansion. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're on at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at RU with Sonali.